and the ritual again. "Stay your hand," Matron Malice commanded, propping herself up in the chair. "Loth is content. Our victory is won. Welcome, then, your brother, the newest member of House Doerden." "Just a male," Breeza commented in obvious disgust, walking away from the idol and the child. "Next time we shall do better," Matron Malice chuckled, though she wondered if there would be a next time. She approached the end of her fifth century of life, and drow elves, even young ones, were not a particularly fruitful lot. Breeza had been born to Malice at the youthful age of 100, but in the almost four centuries since, Malice had produced only 5 other children. Even this baby, Drizzt, had come as a surprise, and Malice hardly expected that she would ever conceive again. "Enough of such contemplations," Malice whispered to herself, exhausted. "There will be ample time." She sank back into her chair and fell into fitful, though wickedly pleasant, dreams of heightening power. Zacnaphane walked through the central pillar of the Devere complex, his hood in his hand and his whip and sword comfortably replaced on his belt. Every now and then a ring of battle sounded, only to be quickly ended. House Doerden had rolled through to victory, the 10th house had taken the 4th, and now all that remained was to remove evidence and witnesses. One group of lesser female clerics marched through, tending to the wounded Doerdens and animating the corpses of those beyond their ability, so that the bodies could walk away from the crime scene. Back at the Doerden compound, those corpses not beyond repair would be resurrected and put back to work. Zack turned away with a visible shudder as the clerics moved from room to room, the marching line of Doerden zombies growing ever longer at their backs. As distasteful as Zacnaphane found this troop, the one that followed was even worse. 2 Doerden clerics led a contingent of soldiers through the structure, using detection spells to determine hiding places of surviving Devere's. One stopped in the hallway just a few steps from Zack, her eyes turned inward as she felt the emanations of her spell. She held her fingers out in front of her, tracing a slow line, like some macabre divining rod, toward drow flesh. "In there," she declared, pointing to a panel at the base of the wall. The soldiers jumped to it like a pack of ravenous wolves and tore through the secret door. Inside a hidden cubby huddled the children of House Devere. These were nobles, not commoners, and could not be taken alive. Zack quickened his pace to get beyond the scene, but he heard vividly the children's helpless screams as the hungry Doerden soldiers finished their job. Zack found himself in a run now. He rushed around a bend in the hallway, nearly bowling over Deenan and Risen. "Now Fane is dead," Risen declared impassively. Zack immediately turned a suspicious eye on the younger Doerden's son. "I killed the Devere soldier who committed the deed," Deenan assured him, not even hiding his cocky smile. Zack had been around for nearly 4 centuries, and he was certainly not ignorant of the ways of his ambitious race. The brother princes had come in defensively at the back of the lines with a host of Doerden soldiers between them and the enemy. By the time they even encountered a drow that was not of their own house, the majority of the Devere's surviving soldiers had already switched allegiance to House Doerden. Zack doubted that either of the Doerden brothers had even seen action against a Devere.
"The description of the carnage in the prayer room has been spread throughout the ranks," Risen said to the weapons master. "You performed with your usual excellence, as we have come to expect."
Zack shot the patron a glare of contempt and kept on his way, down through the structure's main doors, and out beyond the magical darkness and silence into Menzo Baranzon's dark dawn. Risen was Matron Malice's present partner in a long line of partners and no more. When Malice was finished with him, she would either relegate him back to the ranks of the common soldiery, stripping him of the name Doerden and all the rights that accompanied it, or she would dispose of him. Zack owed him no respect. Zack moved out beyond the mushroom fence to the highest vantage point he could find, then fell to the ground. He watched, amazed, a few moments later, when the procession of the Doerden army, patron and son, soldiers and clerics, and the slow-moving line of 2 dozen drow zombies made its way back home.
They had lost and left behind nearly all of their slave fodder in the attack, but the line leaving the wreckage of House Devere was longer than the line that had come in earlier that night. The slaves had been replaced twofold by captured Devere slaves, and 50 or more of the Devere common troops, showing typical Drow loyalty, had willingly joined the attackers. These traitorous Drow would be interrogated, magically interrogated, by the Dawerdan clerics to ensure their sincerity. They would pass the test to a one, Zack knew. Drow elves were creatures of survival, not of principle. The soldiers would be given new identities and would be kept within the privacy of the Dawerdan compound for a few months, until the fall of House Devere became an old and forgotten tale. Zack did not follow immediately. Rather, he cut through the rows of mushroom trees and found a secluded dell, where he plopped down on a patch of mossy carpet and raised his gaze to the eternal darkness of the cavern ceiling and the eternal darkness of his existence. It would have been prudent for him to remain silent at that time. He was an invader to the most powerful section of the vast city. He thought of the possible witnesses to his words, the same dark elves who had watched the fall of House Devere, who had wholeheartedly enjoyed the spectacle. In the face of such behavior and such carnage as this night had seen, Zack could not contain his emotions. His lament came out as a plea to some god beyond his experience. What place is this that is my world? What dark coil has my spirit embodied? He whispered the angry disclaimer that had always been a part of him. In light, I see my skin is black. In darkness, it glows white in the heat of this rage I cannot dismiss. Would that I had the courage to depart this place or this life, or to stand openly against the wrongness that is the world of these my kin, to seek an existence that does not run afoul to that which I believe, and to that which I hold dear faith is truth. Zack Nefane Dawerdan I am called, yet a drow I am not, by choice or by deed. Let them discover this being that I am, then. Let them rain their wrath on these old shoulders, already burdened by the hopelessness of Menzo Oberynzon. Ignoring the consequences, the weapons master rose to his feet and yelled, Menzo Oberynzon, what hell are you? A moment later, when no answer echoed back out of the quiet city, Zack flexed the remaining chill of Breeze's wand from his weary muscles. He found some comfort as he patted the whip on his belt, the instrument that had taken the tongue from the mouth of a matron mother. 3. The Eyes of a Child. Massage, the young apprentice, which at this point in his magic-using career meant that he was no more than a cleaning attendant, leaned on his broom and watched as Alton Devere moved through the door into the highest chamber of the spire. Massage almost felt sympathy for the student, who had to go in and face the faceless one. Massage felt excitement as well, though, knowing that the ensuing fireworks between Alton and the faceless master would be well worth the watching. He went back to his sweeping, using the broom as an excuse to get farther around the curve of the room's floor, closer to the door.
You requested my presence, Master Faceless One? Alton Devere said again, keeping one hand in front of his face and squinting to fight the brilliant glare of the room's three lighted candles. Alton shifted uncomfortably from one foot to the other, just inside the shadowy room's door. Hunched across the way, the faceless one kept his back to the young Devere. Better to be done with this cleanly, the master reminded himself. He knew, though, that the spell he was now preparing would kill Alton before the student could learn his family's fate, before the faceless one could fully complete Deenan Dawerdan's final instructions. Too much was at stake. Better to be done with this cleanly. You, Alton began again. But he prudently held his words and tried to sort out the situation before him. How unusual to be summoned to the private chambers of a master of the academy before the day's lessons had even begun. When he had first received the summons, Alton feared that he had somehow failed one of his lessons. That could be a fatal mistake in Sorcerer. Alton was close to graduation, but the disdain of a single master could put an end to that. He had done quite well in his lessons with the Faceless One, had even believed that this mysterious master favored him. Could this call be simply a courtesy of congratulations on his impending graduation? Unlikely, Alton realized against his hopes. Masters of the Drow Academy did not often congratulate students. Alton then heard quiet chanting and noticed that the master was in the midst of spellcasting. Something cried out as very wrong to him now. Something about this whole situation did not fit the strict ways of the academy. Alton set his feet firmly and tensed his muscles, following the advice of the motto that had been drilled into the thoughts of every student at the academy, the precept that kept drow elves alive in a society so devoted to chaos. Be prepared. The doors exploded before him, showering the room with stone splinters and throwing Massage back against the wall. He felt the show well worth both the inconvenience and the new bruise on his shoulder when Alton DeVere scrambled out of the room. The student's back and left arm trailed wisps of smoke, and the most exquisite expression of terror and pain that Massage had ever seen was etched on the DeVere noble's face. Alton stumbled to the floor and kicked into a roll, desperate to put some ground between himself and the murderous master. He made it down and around the descending arc of the room's floor and through the door that led into the next lower chamber, just as the Faceless One made his appearance at the sundered door. The master stopped to spit a curse at his misfire and to consider the best way to replace his door. "Clean it up," he snapped at Massage, who was again leaning casually with his hands atop his broomstick and his chin atop his hands. Massage obediently dropped his head and started sweeping the stone splinters. He looked up as the Faceless One stalked past, however, and cautiously started after the master. Alton couldn't possibly escape, and this show would be too good to miss. The third room, the Faceless One's private library, was the brightest of the four in the spire, with dozens of candles burning on each wall. "Damn this light!" Alton spat, stumbling his way down through the dizzying blur to the door that led to the Faceless One's entry hall, the lowest room of the master's quarters. If he could get down from this spire and outside of the tower to the courtyard of the academy, he might be able to turn the momentum against the master. Alton's world remained the darkness of Menzo Berenzon, but the Faceless One, who had spent so many decades in the candlelight of Sorcerer, had grown accustomed to using his eyes to see shades of light, not heat. The entry hall was cluttered with chairs and chests, but only one candle burned there, and Alton could see clearly enough to dodge or leap any obstacles. He rushed to the door and grabbed the heavy latch. It turned easily enough, but when Alton tried to shoulder through, the door did not budge, and a burst of sparkling blue energy threw him back to the floor. "Curse this place!" Alton spat. The portal was magically held. He knew a spell to open such enchanted doors, but doubted whether his magic would be strong enough to dispel the castings of a master. In his haste and fear, the words of the Dwyamer floated through Alton's thoughts in an indecipherable jumble. "Do not run, DeVere," came the Faceless One's call from the previous chamber. "You only lengthen your torment." "A curse upon you, too," Alton replied under his breath. Alton forgot about the stupid spell. It would never come to him in time. He glanced around the room for an option. His eyes found something unusual halfway up the side wall, in an opening between two large cabinets. Alton scrambled back a few steps to get a better angle, but found himself caught within the range of the candlelight, within the deceptive field where his eyes registered both heat and light. He could only discern that this section of the wall showed a uniform glow in the heat spectrum, and that its hue was subtly different from the stone of the walls. Another doorway? Alton could only hope his guess to be right. He rushed back to the center of the room, stood directly across from the object, and forced his eyes away from the infrared spectrum, fully back into the world of light. As his eyes adjusted, what came into view both startled and confused the young DeVere. He saw no doorway, nor any opening with another chamber behind it. What he looked upon was a reflection of himself and a portion of the room he now stood in. Alton had never, in his 55 years of life, witnessed such a spectacle, but he had heard the masters of Sorcerer speak of these devices. It was a mirror.
A movement in the upper doorway of the chamber reminded Alton that the faceless one was almost upon him. He couldn't hesitate to ponder his options. He put his head down and charged the mirror. Perhaps it was a teleportation door to another section of the city, perhaps a simple door to a room beyond, or perhaps, Alton dared to imagine in those few desperate seconds, this was some interplanar gate that would bring him into a strange and unknown plane of existence. He felt the tingling excitement of adventure pulling him on as he neared the wondrous thing. Then he felt only the impact, the shattering glass, and the unyielding stone wall behind it. Perhaps it was just a mirror.
"Look at his eyes," Vierna whispered to Maya as they examined the newest member of House de Urden. Truly, the babe's eyes were remarkable. Though the child had been out of the womb for less than an hour, the pupils of his orbs darted back and forth inquisitively. While they showed the expected radiating glow of eyes seeing into the infrared spectrum, the familiar redness was tinted by a shade of blue, giving them a violet hue.
"Blind?" wondered Maya. "Perhaps this one will be given to the Spider Queen still."
Breeza looked back to them anxiously. Dark elves did not allow children showing any physical deficiency to live.
"Not blind," replied Vierna, passing her hand over the child and casting an angry glare at both of her eager sisters. "He follows my fingers."
Maya saw that Vierna spoke the truth. She leaned closer to the babe, studying his face and strange eyes.
"What do you see, Driz de Urden?" she asked softly,
not in an act of gentleness toward the babe, but so that she would not disturb her mother, resting in the chair at the head of the spider idol.
"What do you see that the rest of us cannot?"
Glass crunched under Alton, digging deeper wounds as he shifted his weight in an effort to rise to his feet. What would it matter, he thought.
"My mirror!"
he heard the faceless one groan, and he looked up to see the outraged master towering over him. How huge he seemed to Alton, how great and powerful, fully blocking the candlelight from this little alcove between the cabinets, his form enhanced tenfold to the eyes of the helpless victim by the mere implications of his presence. Alton then felt a gooey substance floating down around him, detached webbing finding a sticky hold on the cabinets, on the wall, and on Alton. The young Devere tried to leap up and roll away, but the faceless one's spell already held him fast, trapped him as a dirgent fly would be trapped in the strands of a spider's home.
"First my door," the faceless one growled at him, "and now this, my mirror. Do you know the pains I suffered to acquire such a rare device?"
Alton turned his head from side to side, not in answer, but to free at least his face from the binding substance.
"Why did you not just stand still and let the deed be finished cleanly?"
the faceless one roared, thoroughly disgusted.
"Why?"
Alton lisped, spitting some of the webbing from his thin lips.
"Why would you want to kill me?"
"Because you broke my mirror,"
the faceless one shot back. It didn't make any sense, of course. The mirror had only been shattered after the initial attack. But to the master, Alton supposed, it didn't have to make sense. Alton knew his cause to be hopeless, but he continued on in his efforts to dissuade his opponent.
"You know of my house, of House de Vere," he said indignant. "Fourth in the city. Matron Jinifei will not be pleased. A high priestess has ways to learn the truth of such situations."
"House de Vere?"
the faceless one laughed. Perhaps the torments that Deenan de Urden had requested would be in line after all. Alton had broken his mirror.
"Fourth house!"
Alton spat.
"Foolish youth," the faceless one cackled. "House de Vere is no more. Not fourth, not 54th, nothing."
Alton slumped, though the webbing did its best to hold his body erect. What could the master be babbling about?
"They are all dead," the faceless one taunted. "Matron Jinifei sees Lolth more clearly this day."
Alton's expression of horror pleased the disfigured master.
"All dead," he snarled one more time, "except for poor Alton, who lives on to hear of his family's misfortune. That oversight shall be remedied now.
The faceless one raised his hands to cast a spell.
Who?
Alton cried. The faceless one paused and seemed not to understand.
What house did this?
The doomed student clarified.
Or what conspiracy of houses brought down Devere?
Ah, you should be told, replied the faceless one, obviously enjoying the situation. I suppose it is your right to know before you join your kin in the realm of death. A smile widened across the opening where his lips once had been. But you broke my mirror, the master growled. Die, stupid, stupid boy, find your own answers.
The faceless one's chest jerked out suddenly, and he shuddered in convulsions, babbling curses in a tongue far beyond the terrified student's comprehension. What vile spell did this disfigured master have prepared for him, so wretched that its chant sounded in an arcane language foreign to learned Alton's ears, so unspeakably evil that its semantics jerked on the very edge of its caster's control? The faceless one then fell forward to the floor and expired. Stunned, Alton followed the line of the master's hood down to his back, to the tail of a protruding dart. Alton watched the poisoned thing as it continued to shudder from the body's impact. Then he turned his scan upward to the center of the room, where the young cleaning attendant stood calmly.
Nice weapon, faceless one, Message beamed, rolling a two-handed, crafted crossbow over in his hands.
He threw a wicked smile at Alton and fitted another dart. Matron Malice hoisted herself out of her chair and willed herself to her feet.
Out of the way, she snapped at her daughters.
Maya and Vierna scooted away from the spider idol and the baby.
See his eyes, Matron Mother, Vierna dared to remark. They are so unusual.
Matron Malice studied the child. Everything seemed in place, and a good thing, too, for Nalfane, elder boy of House de Werden, was dead, and this boy Drizzt would have a difficult job replacing the valuable son.
His eyes, Vierna said again.
The matron shot her a venomous look, but bent low to see what the fuss was about.
Purple?
Malice said, startled. Never had she heard of such a thing.
He is not blind.
Maya was quick to put in, seeing the disdain spreading across her mother's face.
Fetch the candle, Matron Malice ordered. Let us see how these eyes appear in the world of light.
Maya and Vierna reflexively headed for the sacred cabinet, but Breeza cut them off.
Only a high priestess may touch the holy items,
she reminded them, in a tone that carried the weight of a threat. She spun around haughtily, reached into the cabinet, and produced a single, half-used red candle. The clerics hid their eyes, and Matron Malice put a prudent hand over the baby's face as Breeza lit the sacred candle. It produced only a tiny flame, but to drow eyes it came as a brilliant intrusion.
Bring it, said Matron Malice after several moments of adjusting.
Breeza moved the candle near Drizzt, and Malice gradually slid her hand away.
He does not cry, Breeza remarked, amazed that the babe could quietly accept such a stinging light. Purple again, whispered the matron, paying no heed to her daughter's rambling. In both worlds, the child's eyes show as purple.
Vierna gasped audibly when she looked again upon her tiny brother and his striking lavender orbs.
He is your brother.
Matron Malice reminded her, viewing Vierna's gasp as a hint of what might come.
When he grows older, and those eyes pierce you so, remember on your life that he is your brother.
Vierna turned away, almost blurting a reply she would have regretted making. Matron Malice's exploits with nearly every male soldier of the de Werden house, and many others that the seductive matron managed to sneak away from other houses, were almost legendary in Menzo Berenzon. Who was she to be spouting reminders of prudent and proper behavior? Vierna bit her lip and hoped that neither Breeza nor Malice had been reading her thoughts at that moment. In Menzo Baranzon, thinking such gossip about a high priestess, whether or not it was true, got you painfully executed. Her mother's eyes narrowed, and Vierna thought she had been discovered.
He is yours to prepare, Matron Malice said to her.
Maya is younger, Vierna dared to protest. I could attain the level of high priestess in but a few years if I may keep to my studies.
Or never,
the matron sternly reminded her.
Take the child to the chapel proper. Wean him to words and teach him all that he will need to know to properly serve as a page prince of House Doerten.
I will see to him,
Breeza offered, one hand subconsciously slipping to her snake-headed whip.
I do so enjoy teaching males their place in our world.
Malice glared at her.
You are a high priestess. You have other duties more important than word-weaning a male child.
Then to Vierna she said,
The babe is yours. Do not disappoint me in this. The lessons you teach Drizzt will reinforce your own understanding of our ways. This exercise at mothering will aid you in your quest to become a high priestess.
She let Vierna take a moment to view the task in a more positive light. Then her tone became unmistakably threatening once again.
It may aid you, but it surely can destroy you.
Vierna sighed, but kept her thoughts silent. The chore that Matron Malice had dropped on her shoulders would consume the bulk of her time for at least 10 years. Vierna didn't like the prospects, she and this purple-eyed child together for 10 long years. The alternative, however, the wrath of Matron Malice Doerten, seemed a worse thing by far.
Alton blew another web from his mouth. You are just a boy, an apprentice, he stammered. Why would you
kill him?
Massage finished the thought.
Not to save you, if that is your hope.
He spat down at the faceless one's body.
Look at me, a prince of the sixth house, a cleaning steward for that wretched...
Hunnette,
Alton cut in.
House Hunnette is the sixth house.
The younger drow put a finger to pursed lips.
Wait,
he remarked with a widening smile, an evil smile of sarcasm.
We are the fifth house now, I suppose, with Devere wiped out.
Not yet,
Alton growled.
Momentarily,
Massage assured him, fingering the crossbow quarrel. Alton slumped even farther back in the web. To be killed by a master was bad enough, but the indignity of being shot down by a boy.
I suppose I should thank you, Massage said. I had planned to kill that one for many 10 days.
Why?
Alton pressed his new assailant.
You would dare to kill a master of Sorcerer simply because your family put you in servitude to him?
Because he would snub me, Massage yelled.
4 years I have slaved for him, that back end of a carrion crawler, cleaned his boots, prepared salve for his disgusting face. Was it ever enough? Not for that one.
He spat at the corpse again and continued, talking more to himself than to the trapped student.
Nobles aspiring to wizardry have the advantage of being trained as apprentices before they reach the proper age for entry into Sorcerer.
Of course, Alton said. I myself trained under.
He meant to keep me out of Sorcerer, Massage rambled, ignoring Alton altogether. He would have forced me into Melee Magvir, the fighter's school, instead.
The fighter's school! My 25th birthday is only 2 10-days away.
Massage looked up, as though he suddenly remembered that he was not alone in the room.
I knew I must kill him, he continued, now speaking directly to Alton. Then you come along and make it all so convenient. A student and master killing each other in a fight? It has happened before. Who would question it?
I suppose, then, that I should thank you, Alton Devere of no house worth mentioning.
Massage chided with a low, sweeping bow.
Before I kill you, I mean.
Wait, cried Alton. Kill me to what gain?
Alibi.
But you have your alibi, and we can make it better.
Explain, said Massage, who admittedly was in no particular hurry.
The faceless one was a high-level wizard. The webs weren't going anywhere anytime soon.
Free me, Alton said earnestly.
Can you be as stupid as the faceless one proclaimed you?
Alton took the insult stoically. The kid had the crossbow. Free me, so that I may assume the faceless one's identity, he explained.
The death of a master arouses suspicion, but if no master is believed dead...
And what of this?
Massage asked, kicking the corpse.
Burn it, said Alton,
his desperate plan coming fully into focus.
Let it be Alton Devere. House Devere is no more, so there will be no retaliation, no questions.
Massage seemed skeptical.
The faceless one was practically a hermit, Alton reasoned. And I am near to graduation. Certainly, I can handle the simple chores of basic teaching after 30 years of study. And what is my gain?
Alton gawked, nearly burying himself in webbing, as if the answer were obvious.
A master and sorcerer to call mentor, one who can ease your way through your years of study.
And one who can dispose of a witness at his earliest convenience, Massage added slyly.
And what would then be my gain? Alton shot back. To anger House Honnette, fifth in all the city, and I with no family at my back?
No, young Massage, I am not as stupid as the faceless one named me. Massage ticked a long and pointed fingernail against his teeth and considered the possibilities. An ally among the masters of Sorcerer? This held possibilities. Another thought popped into Massage's mind, and he pulled open the cabinet to Alton's side and began rummaging through the contents. Alton flinched when he heard some ceramic and glass containers crashing together, thinking of the components, possibly even completed potions, that might be lost by the apprentice's carelessness. Perhaps Melee MacVeer would be a better choice for this one, he thought. A moment later, though, the younger drow reappeared, and Alton remembered that he was in no position to make such judgments.
This is mine, Massage demanded, showing Alton a small black object,
a remarkably detailed onyx figurine of a hunting panther.
A gift from a denizen of the lower plains for some help I gave to him.
You aided such a creature? Alton had to ask, finding it difficult to believe that a mere apprentice had the resources necessary to even survive an encounter with such an unpredictable and mighty foe.
The faceless one. Massage kicked the corpse again. Took the credit and the statue, but they are mine. Everything else in here will go to you, of course. I know the magical Dwyamers of most, and will show you what is what.
Brightening at the hope that he would indeed survive this dreadful day, Alton cared little about the figurine at that moment. All he wanted was to be freed of the webs, so that he could find out the truth of his house's fate. Then Massage, ever a confusing young drow, turned suddenly and started away.
Where are you going? Alton asked. To get the acid.
Acid? Alton hid his panic well, though he had a terrible feeling that he understood what Massage meant to do.
You want the disguise to appear authentic, Massage explained matter-of-factly. Otherwise it would not be much of a disguise. We should take advantage of the web while it lasts. It will hold you still.
No, Alton started to protest. But Massage wheeled on him, the evil grin wide on his face.
It does seem a bit of pain, and a lot of trouble to go through, Massage admitted. You have no family and will find no allies in Sorcerer, since the faceless one was so despised by the other masters.
He brought the crossbow up level with Alton's eyes and fitted another poison dart.
Perhaps you would prefer death.
Get the acid, Alton cried.
To what end?
Massage teased, waving the crossbow.
What have you to live for, Alton Devere, of no house worth mentioning?
Revenge, Alton sneered. The sheer wrath of his tone setting the confident Massage on his heels.
You have not learned this yet, though you will, my young student, but nothing in life gives more purpose than the hunger for revenge.
Massage lowered the bow and eyed the trapped drow with respect. Almost fear. Still, the apprentice Honnette could not appreciate the gravity of Alton's proclamation until Alton reiterated, this time with an eager smile on his face,
"Get the acid!"
4. The First House. 4 cycles of Narbondel. 4 days later. A glowing blue disk floated up the mushroom-lined stone path to the spider-covered gate of House Doerden.
The sentries watched it from the windows of the two outer towers and from the compound as it hovered patiently 3 feet off the ground. Word came to the ruling family only seconds later.
"What can it be?"
Breeza asked Zachnephane when she, the weapons master, Dinan, and Maya assembled on the balcony of the upper level.
"A summons?" Zach asked as much as answered. "We will not know until we investigate."
He stepped up on the railing and out into the empty air, then levitated down to the compound floor. Breeza motioned to Maya, and the youngest Doerden daughter followed Zach.
"It bears the standard of House Baenri," Zach called up after he had moved closer.
He and Maya opened the large gates, and the disk slipped in, showing no hostile movements.
"Baenri,"
Breeza repeated over her shoulder, down the house's corridor to where Matron Malice and Risen waited.
"It seems that you are requested an audience, Matron Mother," Dinan put in nervously.
Malice moved out to the balcony, and her husband obediently followed.
"Do they know of our attack?"
Breeza asked in the silent code, and every member of House Doerden, noble and commoner alike, shared that unpleasant thought. House de Vere had been eliminated only a few days before, and a calling card from the first matron mother of Menzo Berenzon could hardly be viewed as a coincidence.
"Every house knows,"
Malice replied aloud, not believing the silence to be a necessary precaution within the boundaries of her own complex.
"Is the evidence against us so overwhelming that the ruling council will be forced to action?"
She stared hard at Breeza, her dark eyes alternating between the red glow of infravision and the deep green they showed in the aura of normal light.
"That is the question we must ask."
Malice stepped up onto the balcony, but Breeza grabbed the back of her heavy black robe to stay her.
"You do not mean to go with the thing?" Breeza asked.
Malice's answering look showed even more startlement.
"Of course," she replied. "Matron Baenri would not openly call upon me if she meant me harm. Even her power is not so great that she can ignore the tenets of the city."
"You are certain that you will be safe?"
Risen asked, truly concerned. If Malice was killed, Breeza would take over the house, and Risen doubted that the eldest daughter would want any male by her side. Even if the vicious female did desire a patron, Risen would not want to be the one in that position. He was not Breeza's father, was not even as old as Breeza. Clearly, the present patron of the house had a lot at stake in Matron Malice's continued good health.
"Your concern touches me,"
Malice replied, knowing her husband's true fears. She pulled out of Breeza's grasp and stepped off the railing, straightening her robes as she slowly descended. Breeza shook her head disdainfully and motioned Risen to follow her back inside the house, not thinking it wise that the bulk of the family be so exposed to unfriendly eyes.
"Do you want an escort?"
Zach asked, as Malice sat on the disk.
"I am certain that I will find one as soon as I am beyond the perimeter of our compound," Malice replied. "Matron Baenri would not risk exposing me to any danger while I am in the care of her house."
"Agreed," said Zach. "But do you want an escort from House Doerden?"
"If one was wanted, 2 disks would have floated in,"
Malice said in a tone of finality. The matron was beginning to find the concerns of those around her stifling. She was the matron mother, after all, the strongest, the oldest, and the wisest, and did not appreciate others second-guessing her. To the disk, Malice said,
"Execute your appointed task and let us be done with it."
Zach nearly snickered at Malice's choice of words.
"Matron Malice Doerden," came a magical voice from the disk. "Matron Baenri offers her greetings. Too long has it been since last you two have sat in audience."
"Never,"
Malice signaled to Zach.
"Then take me to House Baenri,"
Malice demanded.
"I do not wish to waste my time conversing with a magical mouth."
Apparently, Matron Baenri had anticipated Malice's impatience, for without another word, the disk floated back out of the Doerden compound. Zach shut the gate as it left, then quickly signaled his soldiers into motion.
Malis did not want any open company, but the Doerden spy network would covertly track every movement of the Bayenri sled to the very gates of the ruling house's grand compound. Malis's guess about an escort was correct. As soon as the disk swept down from the pathway to the Doerden compound, 20 soldiers of House Bayenri, all female, moved out from concealment along the sides of the boulevard. They formed a defensive diamond around the guest matron mother. The guard at each point of the formation wore black robes and blazoned on the back with a large purple and red spider design, the robes of a high priestess. "Bayenri's own daughters," Malis mused, for only the daughters of a noble could attain such a rank. How careful the first matron mother had been to ensure Malice's safety on the trip. Slaves and drow commoners tripped over themselves in a frantic effort to get far out of the way of the approaching entourage as the group made its way through the curving streets toward the Mushroom Grove. The soldiers of House Bayenri alone wore their house insignia in open view, and no one wanted to invoke the anger of Matron Bayenri in any way. Malice just rolled her eyes in disbelief and hoped that she might know such power before she died. She rolled her eyes again a few minutes later when the group approached the ruling house. House Bayenri encompassed 20 tall and majestic stalagmites, all interconnected with gracefully sweeping and arching bridges and parapets. Magic and fairy fire glowed from 1,000 separate sculptures, and 100 regally adorned guardsmen paced about in perfect formations. Even more striking were the inverse structures, the 30 smaller stalactites of House Bayenri. They hung down from the ceiling of the cavern, their roots lost in the high darkness. Some of them connected tip to tip with the stalagmite mounds, while others hung freely like poised spears. Ringing balconies, curving up like the edging of a screw, had been built along the length of all of these, glowing with an overabundance of magic and highlighted design. Magic, too, was the fence that connected the bases of the outer stalagmites, encircling the whole of the compound. It was a giant web, silver against the general blue of the rest of the outer compound. Some said it had been a gift from Lolth herself, with iron-strong strands as thick as a drow elf's arm. Anything touching Bayenri's fence, even the sharpest of drow weapons, would simply stick fast until the matron mother willed the fence to let it free. Malice and her escorts moved straight toward a symmetrical and circular section of this fence, between the tallest of the outer towers. As they neared, the gate spiraled and wound out, leaving a gap large enough for the caravan to step through. Malice sat through it all, trying to appear unimpressed. Hundreds of curious soldiers watched the procession as it made its way to the central structure of House Bayenri, the great purple-glowing chapel dome. The common soldiers left the entourage, leaving only the 4 high priestesses to escort Matron Malice inside. The sights beyond the great doors to the chapel did not disappoint her. A central altar dominated the place, with a row of benches spiraling out in several dozen circuits to the perimeter of the great hall. 2,000 drow could sit there with room to stretch. Statues and idols, too numerous to count, stood all over the place, glowing in a quiet black light. In the air high above the altar loomed a gigantic glowing image. A red and black illusion that slowly and continually shifted between the forms of a spider and a beautiful drow female.
"A work of Grumph, my principal wizard," Matron Bayenri explained from her perch on the altar, guessing that Malice, like everyone else who ever came to Chapel Bayenri, was awestruck by the sight. "Even wizards have their place."
"As long as they remember their place," Malice replied, slipping down from the now stationary disk.
"Agreed," said Matron Bayenri. "Males can get so presumptuous at times, especially wizards. Still, I wish that I had Grumph at my side more often these days. He has been appointed Archmage of Menzo Berenzon, you know, and seems always at work on Narbondel or some other such tasks."
Malice just nodded and held her tongue. Of course, she knew that Bayenri's son was the city's chief wizard. Everybody knew. Everybody knew, too, that Bayenri's daughter, Triel, was the matron mistress of the academy, a position of honor in Menzo Berenzon, second only to the title of matron mother of an individual family. Malice had little doubt that Matron Bayenry would somehow work that fact into the conversation before too long. Before Malice took a step toward the stairs to the altar, her newest escort stepped out from the shadows. Malice scowled openly when she saw the thing, a creature known as an illithid, a mind flayer. It stood about 6 feet tall, fully a foot taller than Malice, most of the difference being the result of the creature's enormous head. Glistening with slime, the head resembled an octopus with pupilless, milky white eyes. Malice composed herself quickly. Mind flayers were not unknown in Menzo Berenzon, and rumors said that one had befriended Matron Bayenry. These creatures, though, more intelligent and more evil than even the drow, almost always inspired shudders of revulsion.
"You may call him Methil," Matron Bayenry explained. "His true name is beyond my pronunciation. He is a friend."
Before Malice could reply, Bayenry added,
"Of course, Methil gives me the advantage in our discussion, and you are not accustomed to illithids."
Then, as Malice's mouth drooped open in disbelief, Matron Bayenry dismissed the illithid.
"You read my thought," Malice protested.
Few could insinuate themselves through the mental barriers of a high priestess well enough to read her thoughts, and the practice was a crime of the highest order in drow society.
"No,"
Matron Bayenry explained, immediately on the defensive.
"Your pardon, Matron Malice. Methil reads thoughts, even the thoughts of a high priestess, as easily as you or I hear words. He communicates telepathically. On my word, I did not even realize that you had not yet spoken your thoughts."
Malice waited to watch the creature depart the great hall, then walked up the steps to the altar. In spite of her efforts against the action, she could not help peeking up at the transforming spider and drow image every now and then.
"How fares House Dowerden?" Matron Bayenry asked, feigning politeness.
"Well enough," replied Malice,
more interested at that moment in studying her counterpart than in conversing. They were alone atop the altar, though no doubt a dozen or so clerics wandered through the shadows of the great hall, keeping a watchful eye on the situation. Malice had all that she could handle in hiding her contempt for Matron Bayenry. Malice was old, nearly 500, but Matron Bayenry was ancient. Her eyes had seen the rise and fall of a millennium by some accounts, though drow rarely lived past their 7th, and certainly not their 8th century. While drow normally did not show their age, Malice was as beautiful and vibrant now as she had been on her 100th birthday. Matron Bayenry was withered and worn. The wrinkles surrounding her mouth resembled a spider's web, and she could hardly keep the heavy lids of her eyes from dropping altogether. Matron Bayenry should be dead, Malice noted, but still she lives. Matron Bayenry, seeming so beyond her time of life, was pregnant, and due in only a few 10 days. In this aspect, too, Matron Bayenry defied the norm of the Dark Elves. She had given birth 20 times, twice as often as any others in Menzo Berenzon, and 15 of those she bore were female, every one a high priestess. 10 of Bayenry's children were older than Malice.
"How many soldiers do you now command?" Matron Bayenry asked, leaning closer to show her interest.
300, Malice replied.
"Oh,"
mused the withered old drow, pursing a finger to her lips.
"I had heard the count at 350.
Malice grimaced in spite of herself. Bayenry was teasing her, referring to the soldiers House Dowerden had added in its raid on House Devere.
300, Malice said again. "Of course," replied Bayenry, resting back. "And House Bayenry holds 1,000?
Malice asked, for no better reason than to keep herself on even terms in the discussion.
"That has been our number for many years."
Malice wondered again why this old, decrepit thing was still alive. Surely more than one of Bayenry's daughters aspired to the position of Matron Mother. Why hadn't they conspired and finished Matron Bayenry off? Or why hadn't any of them, some in the later stages of life, struck out on their own to form separate houses, as was the norm for noble daughters when they passed their 5th century? While they lived under Matron Bayenry's rule,
their children would not even be considered nobles, but would be relegated to the ranks of the commoners.
"You have heard of the fate of House de Vere?" Matron Bayenry asked directly, growing as tired of the hesitant small talk as her counterpart.
"Of what house?" Malice asked pointedly. At this time, there was no such thing as House de Vere in Menzo Berenzon. To Drow reckoning, the house no longer existed. The house never existed. Matron Bayenry cackled.
"Of course," she replied. "You are matron mother of the ninth house now. That is quite an honor."
Malice nodded.
"But not as great an honor as matron mother of the eighth house."
"Yes," agreed Bayenry.
"But ninth is only one position away from a seat on the ruling council."
"That would be an honor indeed," Malice replied. She was beginning to understand that Bayenry was not simply teasing her, but was congratulating her as well and prodding her on to greater glories. Malice brightened at the thought. Bayenry was in the highest favor of the Spider Queen. If she was pleased with House de Werden's ascension, then so was Lolf.
"Not as much of an honor as you would believe," said Bayenry. "We are a group of meddling old females, gathering every so often to find new ways to put our hands into places they do not belong."
"The city recognizes your rule."
"Does it have a choice?" Bayenry laughed. "Still, drow business is better left to the matron mothers of the individual houses.
Loth would not stand for a presiding council exacting anything that even remotely resembled total rule. Do you not believe that House Bayenry would have conquered all of Menzo Berenzon long ago, if that was the Spider Queen's will?" Malice shifted proudly in her chair, appalled by such arrogant words.
"Not now, of course," Matron Bayenry explained. "The city is too large for such an action in this age. But long ago, before you were even born, House Bayenry would not have found such a conquest difficult. But that is not our way. Loth encourages diversity. She is pleased that houses stand to balance each other, ready to fight beside each other in times of common need."
She paused a moment and let a smile appear on her wrinkled lips.
"And ready to pounce upon any that fall out of her favor."
Another direct reference to House de Vere, Malice noted, this time directly connected to the Spider Queen's pleasure. Malice eased out of her angry posture and found the rest of her discussion, fully 2 hours long, with Matron Bayenry, quite enjoyable. Still, when she was back on the disk and floating out through the compound, past the grandest and strongest house in all of Menzo Berenzon, Malice was not smiling. In the face of such an open display of power, she could not forget that Matron Bayenry's purpose in summoning her had been twofold: to privately and cryptically congratulate her on her perfect coup, and to vividly remind her not to get too ambitious. 5. Weaning. For 5 long years, Vierna devoted almost every waking moment to the care of baby Drizzt. In drow society, this was not so much a nurturing time as an indoctrinating time. The child had to learn basic motor and language skills, as did children of all the intelligent races. But a drow elf also had to be grilled on the precepts that bound the chaotic society together. In the case of a male child such as Drizzt, Vierna spent hour after endless hour reminding him that he was inferior to the drow females. Since almost all of this portion of Drizzt's life was spent in the family chapel, he encountered no males except during times of communal worship. Even when all in the house gathered for the unholy ceremonies, Drizzt remained silent at Vierna's side, with his gaze obediently on the floor. When Drizzt was old enough to follow commands, Vierna's workload lessened. Still, she spent many hours teaching her younger brother. Presently, they were working on the intricate facial hand and body movements of the silent code. Often, though, she just sat Drizzt about the endless task of cleaning the domed chapel. The room was barely a fifth the size of the great hall in House Bayenry, but it could hold all the dark elves of House de Werden with 100 seats to spare. Being a wean mother was not so bad now, Vierna thought, but still she wished that she could devote more of her time to her studies. If Matron Malice had appointed Maya to the task of rearing the child, Vierna might already have been ordained as a high priestess. Vierna still had another 5 years in her duties with Drizzt. Maya might attain high priestesshood before her. Vierna dismissed that possibility. She could not afford to worry about such problems. She would finish her tenure as wean mother in just a few short years. On or around his 10th birthday, Drizzt would be appointed page prince of the family and would serve all the household equally. If her work with Drizzt did not disappoint Matron Malice, Vierna knew that she would get her due. "Go up the wall," Vierna instructed. "Tend to that statue." She pointed to the sculpture of a naked drow female about 20 feet from the floor. Young Drizzt looked up at it, confused. He couldn't possibly climb up to the sculpture and wipe it clean while holding any secure perch. Drizzt knew the high price of disobedience, though, even of hesitation, and he reached up, searching for his first handhold. "Not like that," Vierna scolded. "How?" Drizzt dared to ask, for he had no idea of what his sister was hinting at. "Wheel yourself up to the gargoyle," Vierna explained. Drizzt's small face crinkled in confusion. "You are a noble of House de Werden," Vierna shouted at him. "Or at least you will one day earn that distinction. In your neck purse you possess the emblem of the house, an item of considerable magic." Vierna still wasn't certain if Drizzt was ready for such a task. Levitation was a high manifestation of innate drow magic, certainly more difficult than limning the objects in fairy fire or summoning globes of darkness. The de Werden emblem heightened these innate powers of drow elves, magic that usually emerged as a drow matured. Whereas most drow nobles could summon the magical energy to levitate once every day or so, the nobles of House de Werden, with their insignia tool, could do so repeatedly. Normally, Vierna would never have tried this on a male child younger than 10, but Drizzt had shown her so much potential in the last couple of years that she saw no harm in the attempt. "Just put yourself in line with the statue," she explained, "and wheel yourself to rise." Drizzt looked up at the female carving, then lined his feet just out in front of the thing's angled and delicate face. He put a hand to his collar, trying to attune himself to the emblem. He had sensed before that the magic coin possessed some type of power, but it was only a raw sensation, a child's intuition. Now that Drizzt had some focus in confirmation to his suspicions, he clearly felt the vibrations of magical energy. A series of deep breaths cleared distracting thoughts from the young drow's mind. He blocked out the other sights of the room. All he saw was the statue, the destination. He felt himself grow lighter, his heels went up, and he was on one toe, though he felt no weight upon it. Drizzt looked over at Vierna, his smile wide in amazement. Then he tumbled to a heap. "Foolish male," Vierna scolded. "Try again. Try 1,000 times if you must." She reached for the snake-headed whip on her belt. "If you fail..." Drizzt looked away from her, cursing himself. His own elation had caused the spell to falter. He knew that he could do it now, though, and he was not afraid of being beaten. He concentrated again on the sculpture and let the magical energy gather within his body. Vierna, too, knew that Drizzt would eventually succeed. His mind was keen, as sharp as any Vierna had ever known, including those of the other females of House de Werden. The child was stubborn, too. Drizzt would not let the magic defeat him. She knew he would stand under the sculpture until he fainted from hunger if need be. Vierna watched him go through a series of small successes and failures, the last one dropping Drizzt from a height of nearly 10 feet. Vierna flinched, wondering if he was seriously hurt.